A lot has changed in my life since I was last with you. Most recently, we added a third child named Judah. So, thank you. So we now have a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 2-month-old. So you might be looking at me and thinking there was more hair up here last time, and that's probably true. Nonetheless, I'm glad to be with you today. So my children, I love them to death, and they always are doing crazy things, especially my eldest, Elijah. In fact, last week he decided all of a sudden at the end of church that he would play hide-and-seek, except he didn't tell anybody. And so when the child care workers went through, they locked up the basement and came up, and I realized our son was gone. And so we went looking everywhere for him and couldn't find him. And then finally we heard him banging on the basement doors that he was hiding in there. So I put that on Facebook, and some of my friends were like, you should just create your own Facebook page for Elijah and all his stories. But one thing that Elijah does also is he likes to create categories for things. And I think that's something that we all do. So one way that he creates categories for things is for what friends are and what people are. In his mind, friends are his age. They're friends that he plays with. And if you're an adult, you're a people. And so one day we had some friends over from church. It was our first time kind of hanging out with them, getting to know them. We just wanted to let them feel welcome. So we told our kids that we had friends coming over tonight. And so they came and knocked on our door. And Elijah actually ran and opened it. And the first thing he said was, these aren't friends, these are people. So we had to like very, you know, apologetically, oh, no, here's what he means. He just means you're an adult. You're not someone his own age. Another thing he'll create categories for is food. He has very specific categories about what is breakfast and what is lunch and what is dinner. One morning, we had some leftover chicken that I gave them for breakfast instead of the typical muffins that we make or eggs and sausage. And he looked at this and he said, no, this is dinner. I'm not eating this. I said, you know, it's okay. It's food. We can eat whatever we want for breakfast or lunch or dinner. And he said, no, this is dinner. And so he refused to eat what he categorized dinner food for breakfast food. As children, our experiences that we have can create categories for us and can create expectations for things. It's how we make sense of the world. And in addition, our environment and our culture gives us those categories, which at times and most times is very helpful. At times, it can also actually limit, though, our ability to see what is happening around us. The passage that we're looking at today, a post-resurrection passage from Luke 24, I think hints at that a little bit. You know, I always want to think about myself in this time post the resurrection. Like, how would I have responded? Would I have been like them? Would I have just quickly seen Jesus, or would I also have not had any idea what was going on? Just before this passage right here, this is really just right after the resurrection. Just earlier, the women came to the tomb to pay their respects to Jesus, and they didn't find him there. And some angels came and said, the Lord has risen. And then we go straight from there to here. So this is kind of one of the first instances in Luke when we see the disciples encounter Jesus. As I look at this passage, I wonder, how is it really possible that the disciples completely missed out on Jesus? I mean, he was like walking right beside them. How did they completely miss out that Jesus was walking right beside them? Even as he opened up the scriptures, it said he went all the way back to Moses through the prophets and explained everything to them. And I'm sure he probably did a pretty good job. You know, he was a great communicator, not to mention he's God, you know, he would have done a pretty good job communicating that to them. How did they miss that out? But, you know, often I can look back on my life and wonder, perhaps I'm not so different than the disciples. Perhaps I would have missed out on him too. See, the disciples had some categories for Jesus. They had, their experiences had created some categories for him. In fact, throughout the Gospels, you hear Jesus challenging them because they're kind of putting him in this little box. And Jesus continues to tell them that you're not getting it. They have a knack for putting him in this box, and Jesus continues to challenge their expectations and their perceptions of him. One of their big categories for Jesus was that he would conquer. As their Messiah, that he would come and he would conquer. He would conquer Rome. He would throw down their government. He would judge and cast out enemies. He would restore Israel to prominence and power. Of course, we know this wasn't the path, the way that Jesus came to rule. In fact, as he approached their death, there's two things about Jesus that happened that really did not fit their categories for him at all. First, if we can look back to Palm Sunday a few Sundays ago, we celebrated Jesus riding into Jerusalem as a king. Except to the surprise of the disciples, he doesn't go where they expect him to. Fitting with their expectations of what their Messiah would have done, they should have perhaps expected him to ride in as king and go into the government, to go into the courts of the government and overthrow the power, establishing himself in that seat. Instead, he goes somewhere else. He rides in and overthrows the temple, turning over tables, driving out money changers. See, Jesus' revolution wasn't one of a military upheaval, but a spiritual one. The other thing that happened that didn't fit within their categories of a Messiah was that Jesus was a suffering Messiah who died. Again, they had no category for this. You know, their Messiah was not supposed to suffer, and he certainly was not supposed to die. And so these categories that they have placed him in, perhaps in this passage more so the latter one about a suffering Messiah, prevent the disciples from seeing Jesus. So in many ways, they're not even looking for him. You can actually see in this passage that it said, when they were explaining to Jesus what had happened, that we had hoped that he was the one. Hope is now gone. Because Jesus did not meet their expectations and do what they thought that he would do or should do, hope is gone. It's lost. They're confused. They don't see him, even though he's walking right beside them. Now, I think that Jesus knows this. I think that Jesus knows what's going on with them. He probably gets why they're wrestling with this, why they're not seeing who he is. So I think that's what Jesus is getting at when he asks, what things? This is kind of a place where I can see Jesus doing air quotes and being like, what things are you talking about here? Tell me how you see the situation. What were you expecting would happen? How are you interpreting the circumstances and my death? What ways are you putting me in a box? And what starts off as a very calm, it's amazing to see the change of emotions here in Jesus, I think. Starts off as a very calm, unobtrusive questioning, turns somewhat into a rebuke, as Jesus calls them foolish, and then explains things fully throughout the scriptures. Then, strangely to me, Jesus just continues to, after he's done this, seem to just keep walking. It's almost like he's not even going to say bye or anything. He just keeps walking on. But the disciples strongly urge him to join them. And so he actually does. Being the gracious person that he is, he accepts their invitation, comes in for dinner. And it's when they're in his home, reclining at a meal, they notice who Jesus is. It says, in the breaking of bread, they notice. Perhaps it was when Jesus reached for the bread and went to pass it out, they saw his scars. Or perhaps it brought back memories of the upper room for the Last Supper, where the dots begin to connect, and they saw Jesus once again. The scriptures actually say that their eyes were opened, and then Jesus disappears. I wonder what those things are for us. What categories do we place Jesus in that keep us from seeing him? For about 5 years, I directed a trip of college students to Haiti. And I remember one of my first times there, I was in a village. And we were kind of getting a tour of the place where we were going. And we were working with this organization that an InterVarsity alum had started there. And he was introducing me to some of the guys that were leaders in this organization. And one of the guys was a little bit noticeably different than the rest of them. In fact, he came from a little bit further village, a much poorer village. And you could tell. His name was Sonny. His English was great. And he loved to tell stories. And so he was walking up to me and, you know, being from a little bit poor of a village, you know, you could tell in his clothes and he smelled a little bit. And he's telling me this story and we're standing there and all of a sudden he's kind of telling a story and he kind of reaches over and like grabs my hand. And not just grabs my hand, but like interlocks fingers with me, you know, which I'm not used to strangers just coming up and holding my hand. I don't know about you guys. But that was a little, you know, shocking for me. And kind of in my head, I'm just wanting to, okay, that's great, nice to meet you, now it's time to move on. But he starts to open up a story about when he had nothing to do for his family to give them food. And so he had joined with about 30 other people on an 8-foot boat. Imagine that, just an 8-foot boat and 30 people fitting in there. It was standing room only, to try and go to the States so that he could get money. Only way he knew how to feed his family. And he talked about how a storm came through and how they actually had to end up tossing someone over that died. And then he started talking about the scripture of Jesus calming the storm and how he just found comfort in that. And scripture just was open to a new level for me. No longer was it a story that we can intellectualize, but for him it was a real experience. And there, interlocking fingers, I realized I was standing and talking with Jesus. My categories, though, were initially preventing me from seeing this opportunity. I think we can often look to our upbringing, look to our experiences, look to our environment to see some of those categories that we have. Perhaps for some of us, because of our upbringings, we see God the Father as someone demanding perfection out of us. So we strive as hard as we can to get everything right with him, and oftentimes feel distance because of that, because we never measure up to the standards that God has set for us. So we have a hard time accepting God's offer of grace and his invitation to him. And we really struggle with the story of the prodigal son and wonder, could God really be like that? Could God be someone who, after our rebellion against him, would just run after us with open arms and accept us and throw a feast for us? We have a hard time with that Jesus because of the category that we have. Or, perhaps some of us too, we are business people. We're living now in a corporate American culture, and we see Jesus kind of more like a CEO. This wise business decision maker, very efficient person. And so because of that, we're unwilling to take extravagant risks with our lives and with our finances, because really it doesn't make sense financially to do some of these things. And Jesus wants us to make wise decisions. So why would I ever take a job where I make less money? Or why would I ever want to go and live somewhere where my life might be in danger? Those aren't sound financial decisions. Those aren't good for the bottom line. And so that couldn't possibly be what Jesus wanted me to do. I think in those instances, oftentimes we confuse worldly wisdom with heavenly wisdom. Our perception of who Jesus is can have drastic results for how we follow him and what it looks like in our lives. What are your categories? How can we expand the categories that we place him in so that we don't miss out on him in our daily lives? So that when Jesus is walking right beside us, we don't miss out on him. So that we don't refuse to eat breakfast because it was a dinner food. I think there's a lot of things that we can do here. I just want to draw on two things that I noticed from this passage. So the things that strike me about how Jesus reveals himself here is how he approaches them before the disciples recognize who he is. This is the first sighting in the Gospel of Luke recorded. And so I think there's some significance to how Jesus chooses to reveal himself early on. First off, it's not to the leaders. It's not to this new church's leaders. Not to the 12 that we're familiar with. It's not to the inner three that he invited up to the mountain to see the transfiguration. But to two really unrecognizable disciples. We get one of their names, just one, and that's the only time that he's mentioned in Scripture. So just find this interesting that that's how Jesus reveals himself. Also, it's not in the temple. It's not in the place that God's people gather for worship. It's on the outskirts. It's on the road to a small town that archaeologists today haven't found, actually. So he goes where the disciples and where we would not expect, and he doesn't go to the place of powers. It's in the margins. Jesus reveals himself outside of the temple, or the church, and he reveals himself in the margins. So gathering from those two things, talk about two ways that we can help kind of expand our categories for him and be more open to him in our daily lives. One is getting outside the church. The church is where we go to learn about Jesus. It's our family. But we must go outside the walls of the church sometimes if we want to see him. We see that God and Jesus is always seeking after the lost. He tells stories again and again, even one where he talks about losing one sheep and leaving the 99 to go for the one. If we don't join Jesus in that, if we don't join Jesus in going after the lost, then we miss out on him. When I engage regularly with people who aren't Christian, or people who are seeking out who Jesus is in an effort to share my faith, I see Jesus, and I am challenged in new ways. I oftentimes tell students, if you want to grow in your faith, go and share it. You'll be challenged not only in what you know, but in your ability to live it out. I think that this generation doesn't just want to know if Jesus is true anymore. They want to know, is he good? And that's something only that we can demonstrate, not convince people of. So we grow in our ability to do that as we go out of the church walls and share our faith. The next thing is we need to get out in the margins. And I'll kind of expand that a little bit to say people that just aren't in our area, that are on the margins of our lives. So some people that were in the margins of our lives a while back was the poor in the city of Atlanta. My wife and I had been married for about a year, and we were living in an apartment in Buckhead, actually in same apartment complex with some friends, and so we were trying to pursue community. But God was really just working in our heart of what does it mean to love the poor? And we realized for us, what is out of sight is out of mind. And so as long as we were in our apartment in Buckhead with great coffee shops around and restaurants we could go to all the time and we didn't really see poor people, we just weren't going to think about them. And so one thing that we decided to do was to move into a very low-income, high-crime neighborhood. And we did that with some friends. We lived there for about 2.5 years. It was a challenging time. I think the first 18 months that we lived there, we were broken into about 16 times. And there were times that we just didn't quite know what to do. But God showed up in some pretty incredible ways. And oftentimes it wasn't as much what he was doing in the neighborhood, but in what he was doing in me or in us. I remember one night, there was this woman who was addicted to crack in the neighborhood, and I'm pretty sure she was also involved in prostitution. She would always come knocking at our door in the evening, wanting food or money, and it was always during dinner, always when I didn't want to be interrupted. And there was one night, I remember, like, I actually found myself somewhat hiding behind the couch when I saw her coming, because I didn't want to have to interact with her that night. It's not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to have to go through the same spiel again about why I can't give her money and so forth and so on. But in that moment, hiding behind my couch, I just realized this is not what Jesus would be doing, right? Jesus would not hide behind a couch. I realized in that moment what I prefer is I really prefer a middle or an upper middle class Jesus, I think is what I prefer. You know, upper middle class Jesus doesn't smell. He's not needy. He doesn't ask for help. He doesn't interrupt my life. And he keeps to himself, because that's what good upper middle class people do. And as I looked at my relationships and how I approached people in my neighborhood, I realized that I tend to surround myself with people who are like upper middle class Jesus. And I needed this woman who had a drug addiction and was in prostitution to show me more about Jesus so that I don't miss out on him in the rest of my life. We need to displace ourselves. We need to follow Jesus outside of the church walls and into the margins of our lives. It doesn't have to involve going to another country. It doesn't have to involve moving to a different neighborhood, though it could involve those things. But it could just involve making a friend with someone different than you. Go out to eat in a different part of town. Welcome your neighbor of a different ethnic background to dinner with you at your house. See, because God's image cannot be fully expressed by one gender or culture or socioeconomic status. We need each other to see a fuller picture of God. Friends, Jesus is bigger than any category that we can place him in. As hard as we try to do this, we can't put him into a box. He refuses to get into one. And it's when we loosely kind of hold these categories that we have placed Jesus in our hands and go out that we begin to see more of Jesus and who he really is and are made more effective for his kingdom. So as you go out this week, I pray that your eyes would be opened so that you can come back and share the ways as you went out and you're walking that you saw Jesus walking right beside you. Thank you.